It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Greetings and welcome to the Voice of Indie podcast, episode number 42. I am your host tonight, Beam Weeks, and with me is co-host Stephen Jeeves. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing great. Good to be back on here with you again and looking forward to talking to tonight's guest. It's middle of May down here in Alabama on the side of the lake, which means that the brim are starting to bite. And the fun thing that happens right around these couple of weeks period is the turtles, and I mean big turtles, like dinner plate sized turtles, start coming out of the lake, crawling up through the yard into the woods so that they can lay their eggs. And then a couple of weeks later, we get thousands of little baby turtles coming back down through the yard to get to the lake. And that's kind of happening right now. So you got to watch where you walk out there. But I think the one thing that I'm noticing that's really heartening is that in this past week, a lot of our Fresh Ink Group authors are calling and placing orders for quantities of books because they are starting to schedule events again, book signings, appearances, readings, things at their local libraries, things like that. And one that's particularly fun for me is Mark Herndon, who was the drummer with Alabama for three decades, 32 years, something like that. I should know that number.
28 years.
Yeah. I knew it was somewhere around three decades. He is married to country star singer Leah Seawright now. And the two of them and their band go around and play various places every now and then, except the pandemic kind of shut them down. But she called me to place an order for some books. And when I called her back, she didn't answer. And then later she apologized and said, I was on stage when you called. On stage, that's a good sign. And
yes,
they have also scheduled a concert. Normally, you know, the tradition down here in Alabama in DeKalb County was the band Alabama every June played a concert in their hometown, which is Fort Payne, Alabama. And they called it Fan Appreciation Day. And that tradition has been carried on by Mark and Leah, even though Alabama got a little bit too big to come down here and play where they live anymore. So they were doing that every year, but Mark's a commercial pilot now, and he works every other week. And the week of that show down here, he has to work. So the week before, they're going to do a concert in Center, Alabama. It'll be Mark Herndon on drums, Leah Seawright singing, and the rest of their band playing with them too. So I'm really looking forward to getting out and going and seeing them play, having some fun, and maybe having a box of books sitting there so we can see what we can sell.
Yeah, and the books that he's talking about is Mark's memoir, The High Road, and that's by Mark Herndon. I've read it. Excellent book. If you're a fan of country music, a fan of Alabama, or just enjoy a really cool and fun memoir, grab a copy. Seriously, he's got so many cool and fun and wild stories from his going back to his childhood, his teen years, and then how he got into the band and some of the crazy capers on the road. So The High Road by Mark Herndon. Go grab a copy.
Yeah, and it's also full of some very cool pictures, a lot of them featuring famous people. You know, he's an inductee into the Country Music Hall of Fame in Nashville.
Is.
And he knows people, and people know him, and he's just got a lot of fun stories to hear. So, Beam, we want people to participate in today's show. You got a little roll in telling them how?
Yeah, but before I do that, I got to touch back on something you started with. These brim, they're biting.
Yeah.
Does that hurt?
A lot of people don't even know what a brim is. A brim is kind of a hybrid
thing on
fish.
Your hat.
It's like a bluegill, sunfish, shell cracker. They're bigger than, you know, bluegills that you see around most of the country, though. They're like the size of a dinner plate. You can catch them maybe a pound each. But when they're bedding like this, they come into the shallow waters and they fan out beds and lay their eggs. And if you can find the right area and get a bucket of crickets, start throwing it out there, generally they will bite as it hits the water just to get keep another fish from biting it. So it's not hard to go out, catch 100, 150 of these things in 2-3 hours. And that's a lot of fun.
All right. So enough with the fish talk. If you want to join tonight's show, whether on Twitter or on the phone, here's how.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest. Or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
Woohoo, 516-453-9902.
And we're looking at Twitter right now.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, we've already got some comments on Twitter. We'll get to those in a couple minutes after we introduce our guest. But, Beam, where can people find old shows?
Hey, if you missed an episode or you just want to relive the glory of a previous episode, you can find us on YouTube. Go over to YouTube and just type in Fresh Ink Group and find our channel. And while you're there, hit the subscribe button. Hit the like button on any videos that you watch or listen to, and show your support. Give us a little support. This helps grow this whole thing. You can also find us at freshinkgroup.com under the podcast tab. You can find us at stephengees.com under the podcast tab. You can find us at beamweeks.com, again, under the podcast tab.
I'm sensing a pattern.
And we are also on Spotify. If you have a Spotify account, doesn't matter if it's a freebie account or it's a premium account, just type in Voice of Indie, all one word, Voice of Indie, and every episode we've ever done will pop up right there and you can listen to your heart's content.
Now, last week we talked about Robert G. Willis-Croft's audiobook, part of the Mac McDowell Mission series, the second book in the series called Operation Icebreaker, which, by the way, was the name of the book that I couldn't think of about 3 or 4 weeks ago. I've got it tattooed on my left arm now, so it'll never go away. We promised to play a couple of minutes of that audio book and could not get the file to upload right. So we've solved that problem, and Beam is ready to go. If you'd like to take a minute or two before we meet today's guest and hear a sample from Robert Willis-Croft's audio book, let's hear it.
Surfaced off Cadiz, Spain. It seemed to take forever, but in actuality, it took only about a minute. One moment we were rising like a skyscraper elevator, and the next we slammed into something and stopped dead, surrounded by the awful sound of shrieking, tearing metal. I tried raising the attack periscope, but it didn't move. The skipper tried the navigation scope, got it to rise about a foot, and that was it. "Mac, go to the bridge and see what's going on," the skipper told me. "Captain's got the con," he announced to the control room personnel, as I donned a headset with boom mic and started up the ladder leading to the bridge. I opened the lower trunk hatch. It swung up into the trunk. "Trunk's dry," I announced to the control room. I climbed the rest of the way and cracked the upper hatch. "Just a few drops of water," I announced as I let the spring open it all the way. I squinted into the bright noon sun. "Con, bridge," I said over the circuit. "It looks like we surfaced directly beneath something. A barge, maybe. I can't tell for sure. Whatever we struck must have sunk." I scanned around the surfaced sub, gently rocking in the nearly calm sea off Cadiz, clearly visible to the northeast. "There's a tug 200 yards off the port bow. A guy on the stern is chopping frantically at a steel tow hawser. It's stretched taut, pulling down the tug's stern." I watched for several seconds. The hawser just parted, disappeared below the surface immediately. The tug's on an even keel.
No!
Now the guy is screaming bloody murder, shaking his fists at us. "I'm sending lookouts to the bridge," the skipper said in my ears, "and the photographer." "There's more," I said. "Two missile hatches are sprung, and the bridge is pretty much a twisted mess." "The screw and rudder work," the skipper said. "You got the con. Keep us away from anything else, but stay as close to where you are as possible. I'm on my way to the bridge."
And there you go. That's kind of cool. See, this is what we do. We put the sound effects in there, put some music, and just try to really make it an experience.
And those are all very authentic submarine sounds, too. You should have seen us in the water chasing submarines trying to record all of those sounds. And apparently the U.S. Navy, it takes exception to people tracking their subs. So that got kind of ugly. But Robert Williscroft is very serious about everything being correct and authentic in these audiobooks. And we like that. That's really appealing to fans who know what they're listening to and like for things to be real. So that's part of the Mac McDowell Mission series, Operation Icebreaker audiobook. You can also get that book in hardcover, softcover, ebooks, and, you know, all
and the
different
book
formats.
Trailer, the trailer for the Mac McDowell series is up on our YouTube channel. So go over to Fresh Ink Group on YouTube and watch it, like it, and share it on social media, Twitter, Facebook, wherever.
Yeah, and enjoy it while you can, because we're getting ready to replace that with an updated video that's going to have the third book in the Mac McDowell Mission series, Operation Arctic Sting, which is going to go on sale probably in the next week or so, and be on a pre-sale period probably for about a month. So let's get to tonight's guest. This is John W. Howell, author. John began writing as a full-time occupation after an extensive business career. His specialty is thriller fiction, but John also writes poetry and short stories. His first book, My Girl, spelled G-R-L for girl, introduces the exciting adventures of the book's central character, John J. Cannon. The second Cannon novel, His Revenge, continues the tension. The final book in the trilogy, Our Justice, launched in September 2016, and it concludes the thriller series. John's fourth book, Circumstances of Childhood, launched in October 2017, and it tells a different thriller story of riches to rags, football, Wall Street, brotherly love, redemption, and inspiration with a touch of paranormal to keep you riveted. Well, that sounds like a Hallmark card, doesn't it? The fifth book is a collaboration with the award-winning author Gwendolyn M. Plano, titled The Contract. Heavenly bodies become concerned about the stability of the Earth and send two of their own to risk eternal salvation in order to save the planet. The Contract achieved number one status in its genre. John's latest book is titled Eternal Road, The Final Stop, and it launched just this past September. In search of their eternal home, Sam and James discover a threat to human existence. They also encounter the Prince of Darkness. The question is, can they survive humankind and their eternal souls? All of John's books are available on Amazon in paperback and Kindle editions. John lives in Lakeway, Texas with his wife and their very spoiled rescue pets. Welcome to the show, John.
Welcome, John.
Well, thanks. Thank you, Bean. Thank you, Steve. That was a great introduction. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And that's all of our time for today. So,
okay, well, I'll be out back.
So, John, you're in Lakeway now. Where are you from originally? Where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in Detroit. I'm a product of what I would call the mean streets. I actually went to Frank Cody High School, which is no longer in existence. It was a school of 4,000 kids. I say kids, and most of them look like, they were in the Army at some point. But anyway, I just had a great time. Part of my life was Woodward Avenue. For any of you who have anything to do with cars, you know, that's one of the most famous drag strips in the world.
And a place where the Dream Cruise is held.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we kind of lived the Dream Cruise before it became very popular. So,
yeah, you were probably one of the originals, right? Way back in the day when it was just you're driving to work?
Yeah, more or less. I had the occasion to buy a used, very used, 1949 Ford Club Coupe.
Ooh.
And what was interesting about that year, it had a high lift cam in it. And I'm 16, you know, and had done all my research. So what I did is instead of a two-barrel carburetor, I put a Offenhauser manifold on top of the engine. It was a flathead V8. And then put two Stromberg Carlson carburetors. And I was good to go until the 1957 Chevy came out. Could beat anything on the road.
Man, F-57's a beautiful car.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fast, too. It was the first V8 that Chevy made. And if somebody had a stick shift, I just couldn't stay with them. I mean, it was one of those deals.
Yeah. Was it a two-tone?
Yes. Yeah. In fact, the first one I raced was a cream and green. We just called it cream and green. We won't go into that too far, but
they did a lot of Bel Airs in that cream and green.
Yes, it was a Bel Air, the first one. I just looked at his twin pipes as, you know, he was half a football field ahead of me and said, well, I guess my racing days are over here. So,
after high school, now you went on to college, right?
Oh, I did. In fact, kind of a funny story. I applied to the University of Michigan, and I don't know. I wanted to be a PhD or somebody really highfalutin, right? And something about my average, my all high school average of 2.0, they didn't accept. I couldn't understand that. So
they're kind of
I immediately applied to Michigan State, and loved the school. They opened their arms and welcomed me aboard, 2.0 or no. And I graduated from Michigan State with a degree in social science.
Go green.
Go green.
Yes, absolutely.
Except that I'm a University of Michigan grad, so go blue to also. Let's say go green and blue to both of them.
Sparty on, dude.
I had a boss one. Well, never mind. Go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to say. So, what was the experience like living in East Lansing during this time? Because this is like right
in
my neck of the woods.
Yeah, East Lansing was, and this was from 1959 basically to 63 or 64. East Lansing was a quite a country kind of town. There wasn't a lot going on. The college, of course, made up most everything. So we college kids, we had our local places that we could go to. But interestingly enough, most of the IDs that were checked in East Lansing were checked very closely. In the town of Lansing, however, which is the capital of the state, they seemed to be a little more amenable to college kids with a few bucks in their pocket. And not too many years on them. So we used to go to Lansing a lot for parties and also had a good time. But East Lansing, I have a real fond memory of living there. I was in a fraternity there and really had some good times with the school.
Yeah, it's still relatively a smallish town. Not so country anymore, but it still retains that charm. It's got that kind of a vibe to it. There's
yeah,
just a lot of building out there right now, a lot of construction.
And sadly, the vibe where you came from in Detroit is not very good right now. I mean, that whole area where Cody High School used to be is just basically trash. It's a wasteland now.
Yeah.
And there's
I did a couple of Google Earths around my old house, my old address. And I was kind of shocked. I haven't been back in, I can't tell you how many years, but it was kind of disappointing to see what has happened. Because growing up there, it was a great place.
Yeah, if you go onto YouTube, there are a lot of videos where people will mount a camera in their car and just drive through those neighborhoods. And it, like Stephen just said, it's like a war zone. I mean, a wasteland. It's,
yeah.
I mean, whole neighborhoods that are just abandoned.
Abandoned.
And houses caving in, houses that have been torched. But there's, if you do a deep enough search, you can find these cool videos that people put out that from people that grew up in those neighborhoods, and they'll have home movies from the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, and then they'll run them side by side what their street used to look like when they were kids to what it looks like now, and it just looks like somebody flew overhead and just dropped bombs.
Right.
Yeah, I was born in Detroit and lived there a couple of years, but then I wound up growing up out in the suburbs. And Detroit, I mean, you lived out in the suburbs, but you still went back to Detroit. You shopped at Hudson's. You went to the Ice Capades. You know, you took the kids to have breakfast with Santa Claus downtown. You know, all the shops on Woodward, and it was just a vibrant, fun city with all these venues and concerts and shows and plays and stuff. And then in 1967, the summer of 67, when the riots happened, everybody in the suburbs quit going to Detroit. It was just like, it's dead. We're not going back there. And they started building things out in the suburbs instead. And that's when the city just started dying. It was really sad to see, but you know, there were people.
Well, you and I had the same experience because I did move to a suburb, the Birmingham, Michigan.
Ah, okay. And I moved to Westland.
Oh, there you go.
It's all home week.
It's all home week.
Yeah.
Love you, man. Love you. You're right. You're absolutely right. We used to go to Detroit for everything. Go out to, you know, the Rotunda in Dearborn.
Oh, yeah.
You know, visit Henry Ford Museum.
Yeah,
I mean,
Village.
Most of the culture was in the Detroit area. And it was very sad. I remember distinctly seeing 2001, A Space Odyssey at the Fox Theater.
Ooh.
In downtown Detroit. Remember the Fox?
Yeah, they remodeled it.
It's been restored.
Yeah, fully restored. They hold concerts there. They hold all kinds of really cool stuff there now.
Well, this movie was, you know, in its day, and this was, I have to guess, 1958, was a step forward in terms of technical usage of sound and sight and all that. And to see it in that venue was fabulous. I mean, I never forgot the movie. It was a major thing.
Hmm. So what took you from Michigan to Texas?
Well, that is a long, long, winding road.
Wait a minute. Wasn't there a stop at Notre Dame on the way in between there?
All of that, yeah. But, you know, we're in the spirit of Michigan here. And we're in the spirit of Michigan State. We don't want to taint those memories. I actually went back to Notre Dame after working for like almost 18 years. They had an executive program there. And so I went back and went back to school. I was pretty much full-time school, although I still had to work. From Detroit, I'll try to be real brief here, Bean. I interviewed at Michigan State, and my first job was with Procter & Gamble. And interestingly, I was interviewing for a position that I thought was going to be, I don't know, in Ohio someplace. And it turned out that my first job was in Lansing, Michigan.
Ooh,
from the time they hired me, one of their employees resigned. And they said, oh, why should we move this guy? Just put him right here. So I worked there. Then I went to, I joined a different company. I think you guys are familiar with Bayer AG.
Mm-hmm.
At the point that I went to work for them, it was called Miles Laboratories. And I was hired away from Procter & Gamble. And I worked for Miles for 22 and a half years. Nicely, I rose to head of the house, which I was very fortunate and always loved that experience. And then from there, I went to California, started a consultancy, went to California. You know, you go to California because that's where all the money is blowing on people's lawns. And, you know, you can kind of scoop up a couple of jobs here and there. And
so
luckily,
your
I
rank.
To... Yeah, what's your rake? Yes, rake it in. So I started as a consultant and luckily was hired by a big-time telecommunications company as a consultant. And then, unfortunately, they said, you can't work here as a consultant anymore. You have to be an employee. I went, oh, well, that's good. So I went from, six-figure consulting to five-figure cube dwelling because the company is the company that Dilbert used to work for. Same thing.
Oh, yeah.
So I started with AT&T. It was actually called the SBC at the time, or Pacific Bell, really. And then worked there and was having a great time. I was living in, if you're familiar with wine country, I was living in Sonoma, California, right downtown.
Favorite.
Yeah, right downtown. I mean, I could walk to a restaurant. I could actually, Gundlach Bunshu, which is a winery, was in my backyard. I could go over there and steal grapes. Yeah, if I wanted to.
That's right there where that park is, right in the middle of town.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I was minding my own business. And all of a sudden, I got a call from my boss, said, hey, we have good news. I said, what's that? We want you to come to the headquarters, which was at that time in San Antonio. I said, the headquarters? Oh, gee, I don't know. Can I think about it or whatever? Well, he said, let me put it this way. Your job is at the headquarters.
Yeah.
Now, if you choose to stay in California, that's your business, you know, but... what we're trying to tell you is your job is no longer there. So I thought it over for half a second, because at that time I was almost, I was in my 60s. And I just, for some reason, didn't want to send my resume out when I'm 60-some-odd years old. I can just imagine some 20-something looking at this and going, you know, Grandpa, why don't you give up, right? So I said, okay, I'll go. So we relocated to San Antonio. We had a daughter, wife, and a horse. Mm-hmm. And nicely, AT&T relocated all of us to San Antonio. And I spent the better part until 2012 as an employee there, doing a lot of really good contract work, a lot of interesting stuff, and then I retired. So now we're up to date.
All right.
San Antonio is a beautiful city.
Oh, I loved it there.
Yeah, if they're going to send you someplace, that's a good place to get sent.
Well, we had a bit of a problem. If you know anything about California weather, the daytime it can get up to maybe 90. And at night, it goes down to 55 virtually every night. So you never run your air conditioning because, you know, you soap in the windows. And so we moved to San Antonio and stepped out of the car, and it was 104.
Wow.
And it took us about a year to figure out that we weren't going to fry, you know, when we went outside. So we finally got used to it. But you're right. San Antonio is a great place.
So whereabouts,
okay, listeners,
whereabouts whereabouts is Lakeway, Texas located?
Ah, okay. Well, from San Antonio, I went down to the coast, Port Aransas, and lived there I had a house there for 12 years. And then Hurricane Harvey came through and sort of convinced me to move closer to our daughter, which Lakeway is a suburb of Austin. So we're in the greater metro Austin area.
Cool.
And we believe in keeping Austin weird. We buy into that.
Well, that's what Austin is there for, to be weird.
Exactly.
It's a fun area, though. A lot of fun.
Yeah, it really is. It is.
Yes, Stephen was just saying before I cut him off, callers, give us a call. John W. Howell is on with us. And you can talk to him. You can ask him a question, give him a comment. Call 516-453-9902. That's 516-453-9902. Or you can go over to Twitter and leave a comment or a question in your tweet. Just use hashtag Fresh Ink Group.
And we have a bunch of comments over on Twitter.
All right.
Beam, you want to start with Helen's?
Sure. Dr. Helen Burrell, she says, hello, John Howell, New York City summer, 86 degrees Fahrenheit today. What happened to spring? Well, I agree there because we're in Michigan. We're in the 80s and for the, like the next week or so, we got all 80s. So it's like summer came early. So many people at your Facebook site recommend your Eternal Road, The Last Stop, that I'm motivated to read it. I'm enjoying your interview. Good luck with all your books. Thank you, Helen.
Yeah, we've also got Verwayne Greenhose left a couple of comments. He says, good to hear from you, John. And then he added, oh, I've been to several Woodward Dream Cruises. I think the last one was in 2017. I loved them. They're still doing them, Verwayne.
Yeah, and Robert G. Williscroft says, I take it the school wasn't woke then. No, it wasn't.
We've got a comment from Jan Sykes. She says, I'm late to the party, but you are sharing some great memories at Howl Wave. And Jan Sykes is going to be a guest on this podcast about a month from now. So we're looking forward to having her on there. She's another Texas writer.
Yeah. Hi, Jan. Okay. Verwayne Greenhall, he says, I got my BS from Michigan and my wife got hers from MSU. Interesting. We watch basketball and football in different rooms on certain days of the year. Yeah.
Yeah, and Jan Sykes added, that must have been culture shock moving from California to San Antonio. Yeah, I can imagine.
Certainly was.
Okay, Beam, you want to roll a commercial, and then we'll come back and talk to John about his books and his writing and life in Texas?
Sure thing.
Phil Lippert was thrown into the bowels of the Michigan Department of Corrections as a 17-year-old adolescent. He remained entrenched in a world of malfeasance for the next 40 years. With astonishing honesty, he reveals the raw details of what a life of incarceration looks like from the inside. His observations of human behavior and his stellar ability to tell a story reveal the courage and resilience of a man who has survived horrifying and savage injustice. Sometimes tragic, but often humorous and redemptive, Crimes and the People Who Commit Them offers a poignant collection of stories and miscreants and corrupt institutions, tales of men who have made poor choices and suffered grave consequences. Through it all, Phil Lippert displays a sly sense of humor and the quiet wisdom of a man who is, ultimately, a survivor. Lippert's journey has been one of an unrequited longing for freedom. Crimes and the People Who Commit Them is proudly published in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats, available worldwide.
Yeah.
Another Fresh Ink Group book. The soundtrack for the trailer is what you just heard. The actual video that's going to go with that's probably not going to be finished until around tomorrow or so. That's not about right, Beam?
Yeah, I think we've got just a few more things to do to it, and we will have that ready to go tomorrow sometime or Friday. But
now, those of you who are signed up for our newsletter, and if you're not, go to freshinkgroup.com, and it's down near the bottom of the home page. Go ahead and put your email address in there. When you get your newsletter next Wednesday announcing the podcast, we'll make sure we have the completed video in that newsletter so you can check it out too.
Yeah. Now, since we've, you know, kind of learned a lot more about John Howell here, John, hobbies. You're down there in Texas. You're retired now. You got any hobbies? What interests you in your spare time?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Are you familiar with the dog breed French Bulldog?
Yeah.
Okay. That's the kind of dog where somebody says, hey, get one. You'll have a good time. You'll love it. They sort of say that. I also have a boxer. So I have these two take up a lot of my time as far as walking, playing, and et cetera. So I call them my hobby, and I do feature them on my blog on Thursday. Beyond that, I do the standard stuff like mow the lawn, take care of the garden and all of that. And I have to admit, I'm pretty much mostly a writer. My hobby is writing, I think.
Wow, you call that a hobby, huh? I call it a way of life. Got to do
Some
it.
Some people call it an affliction.
We do have a caller.
Yeah,
you guys want to take a call?
Great.
Sure.
All right. Get this.
Hello.
Hello, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Jan Sykes. Hey, guys.
Hi, Jan.
Hi, Jan.
Jan Sykes. Gosh, good to talk to you.
So I actually have a question I want to ask John about The Eternal Road. It was a fabulous book. I loved every bit of it, and it made me think some what ifs about when we depart from this human body. So I'm curious as to what inspired John to write this story and if it has anything to do with religious beliefs.
That's a great question, Jan.
And John, maybe you could start with just briefly telling us what the book is about for those that aren't familiar with it.
Okay. This is a story of a couple who in grade school, they were very close. The young lady, the girl, was actually abducted and murdered. And the guy actually was in an accident some 17 years later. And the story is about this couple trying to find the eternal home for the guy. The young lady already has her eternal home. She was gone for 17 years, and so she's well established. But her job is to find a home for the central character, whose name is James. So her name is Sam. His name is James. And the whole book is about their journey, and it's a journey through time, a journey through space, through I would call actualization. It's a journey that is a few rocks in the road. They meet up with Lucifer now and then. As you can imagine, Lucifer has no good intentions. I mean, even if he looks good.
I don't trust him.
Yeah, I don't either. He was kind of a horrifying character, actually. So the whole idea is for Sam to be a guide to James, so that he finds the eternal home that he will be happiest for eternity. I think that's really all anyone needs to know about it at this point. Jan, to your question, this book is pretty seated in some strong beliefs that I have about what happens to us once we take that, final, what we call it, final three fingers of bourbon or final breath or whatever it is. What does happen to us is in my mind, a whole different set of circumstances. And it's a set of circumstances that isn't based in religion. It's more based in how would like to see eternity go. Now, I know that sounds pretty arrogant, and it may not even be up to me, but at least while I'm writing books, it can be the way I want it. I see eternity as being a quest to get closer to the ultimate being. And I think, I believe in God. I don't know if that's a problem to anybody, but I do. And I don't believe that once we cross over, we're automatically placed there. I think that it's a matter of coming and going, coming back to Earth, earning a little bit more, going there, learning more, coming back. So there's a little reincarnation in there. There's a little bit of Christianity in there. It's kind of just a very personal view of how I'd like to see things turn out.
Well, I think that was one of the things that I absolutely loved about the book, because it resonated with me and my own beliefs. And so it just really gave me a lot of pause, and just thinking, what if, and who's going to be my guide? And so it was a fabulous story, and I loved it.
Well, we think we know who your guide's going to be.
Who knows?
And for those who don't know, Jan has some wonderful books about she and her relationship of her husband who did pass. And I think, Those are really great stories, Jan. And I'm sure Rook's going to be there.
Oh, thank you, John. thank you.
Yeah, and it isn't a preachy book. It's not something that I struck out to say, okay, I'm going to convert people to anything. There's no conversion.
It's
a theory.
Right.
Yeah, to what you were saying, you know, as a writer, I mean, and I've said this before, I've said this for years, that we are creators sitting in the seat of creating worlds and characters, people within these stories. So, I mean, we get to dabble and pretend to be, you know, to play small g God as we create these worlds and all that. But that's what we are. We are creators. And so you can create any world you want if you have the imagination for it.
That's very true. Very true.
Well, you can also have fun
That's kind of all I wanted. I just kind of wanted John to share a little bit of that, and I'll get off and continue listening and give somebody else a shot. But enjoying the show. And
well, thank you for calling in, Jan.
Hearing more about you, John. Absolutely. And I'll look forward to chatting with you guys soon.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks, Jan.
Thanks, Jan.
All righty. Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right.
And over on Twitter, Verwayne Greenho says, in my years as a paramedic and then as an ER nurse, I saw many people take that final journey. Some were frightened at first and then smiled as they slipped away. I always wanted to know what they saw that made them smile someday.
Wow, great comment.
Yeah. And Robert Williscroft added, at the Los Angeles Adventurers Club, we go on the great adventure, quote unquote, OTGA, going on the great adventure. I like that.
Well, it reminds me of some years ago, there was the commercial where the young grandson, he must have been 10, 11 years old, he's sitting there with his grandfather, and he says, Grandpa, where do we go when we die? And Grandpa says, in the ground. It was funny because he's just this curmudgeon old guy, he's in the ground. But, yeah, I mean, I'm a believer. I believe that I believe in God. I believe in, you know, there's more to it than this. This is not the end when we leave here. So, I mean, that's just my own beliefs, but everybody's entitled to theirs.
So, John, what is your writing process? Are you write on a pad longhand or a word processor or sitting out on the deck in the sunshine or, you know, late at night, early in the morning? How do you write? When do you write? Where do you write?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have this thing about doing 1,000 words a day on whatever my current work and process is. And what I've done is I've kind of designed my life around that. In other words, I don't really feel accomplished in a day until I've done that 1,000 words. And it doesn't matter that I've written 1,000 words somewhere else on my blog or whatever. It's always focused on that work in process. So what I try to do is I try to get that 1,000 words in as soon as I can. And sometimes life, you know, and everything gets in the way. But I really concentrate on a couple of things. First of all, when I get up in the morning, I'm pretty much attuned to answering comments, emails, and all of that, first thing. My pea brain is not ready for creation when I'm about a half a pint low on caffeine. So what I do is I pretty much work on emails, I work on comments on my blog first thing in the morning. And then once that's done, I try to get rid of the particular post for the day, the blog post. By get rid of, I mean put it to bed, you know, get it done. So then the balance of the day I have for that 1,000 words. And so between honey-do lists and all the other things that can go on in a day, I pretty much do that 1,000 words. I used to write with music, Stephen. In fact, the first three books I wrote to the Queen albums.
No.
I don't do that anymore. I can write anywhere, anytime, any place. And what I've done is I've pretty much molded myself to concentrate on those 1,000 words. In other words, if I sit on the couch, let's say I have my emails done, I have my blog post up, and I sit on the couch, I immediately attack those, that part of the 1,000 words. And it may take me, you know, 2 or 3 hours to do 1,000 words. It may just take that. But I find that if I'm dedicated to it, I'll get it done. I do go outside in the sun. I mentioned that French bulldog. She loves to lay in the sun. And I don't mind as long as the umbrella's up. So I do go out there and do write out on the patio. I absolutely write at a desk sometimes. I write on the couch. I don't think the only place I don't write is in the bed. The bed to me is for reading.
Hmm.
I go there and that's where I do all my reading before I pass out. I shouldn't say pass out, but before my eyes close and I can't keep them open anymore, because I believe in reading every day. So my process is really churning out a lot of productivity, but doing it in pieces that make sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. We do have another caller. You guys want to take another call?
Great.
All right.
Sounds good.
Click this old button here. And hello, caller. You are on the air. Where are you calling from and what's your name?
Hi, Beam. This is Phil in Coral, Michigan.
Hi, Phil.
Hi,
how
Phil.
You doing tonight?
Hey,
I'm
Bill.
Good. I'm good. How y'all doing?
Doing well. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, we're fair to be.
Thanks. I'm sorry?
You have a comment or a question for John Howell?
Yes, I've been enjoying the show tonight. This is good stuff, and I look forward to reading this material. I admit I wasn't familiar with it before, but now I'm intrigued, and also with the talk of Texas left me nostalgic. I spent some of the best years of my life down there, and every day of a Michigan winter, I'm asking myself, why aren't I in Austin?
yeah.
But
I've
we got a summer day today. We got summer today where I live, and that's a big deal.
yeah. We had summer up here today. We've been in the 80s for the last couple of days, so and we've got 80s here for the foreseeable future, at least for the next week.
Well, you
that's
two,
great.
Bill and Beam ought to know that in Austin, it's been raining for 3 days.
Wow.
It's due to be raining through Monday. Today
Whoa.
Was 70. Yeah, 70. And then, Bill, you would have been right at home about 3 weeks ago or four when we had temperatures mm-hmm. hovering at 32 for 6 days.
Wow.
No.
yeah, John, the caller's name is Phil.
Phil. I said Bill,
Phil.
Didn't I?
Yeah.
Sorry, Phil.
No problem. I just wanted to call in and congratulate you on your success here in the business where it's not easy to get to where you've gotten, and I wish you continued success, and I'll say good night.
Well, thanks for calling
Thank you
in
so much,
and joining
Phil.
The show, Phil.
You bet.
Yeah, thanks, Phil.
Okay. You want to go do another commercial?
Yeah, we're starting to run short on time here. We're going to want to let John talk about each of his books. So why don't you go ahead and roll the commercial that talks about one of his books, and that's Gwen Plano's The Culmination, but she talks about the whole series.
Okie doke.
And remember, listeners, the first
book. Best-selling author Gwen M. Plano presents The Culmination, A New Beginning, the final book in the Contracts thriller series. In the first book, co-penned by best-selling author John W. Howell, the Earth is threatened with a catastrophic event, and Heaven's leadership intervenes with extraordinary measures to ensure the survival of the planet. In Book 2, The Choice, a confidential team uncovers a traitorous conspiracy that has as its goal world domination. The pressing question is, who can be trusted and who cannot. The culmination, A New Beginning, brings the Contract thriller trilogy to a close. After an assassination attempt on an Air Force base in Northern California, tensions mount. Heads of state meet to craft a denuclearization agreement. The meetings between these nuclear powers take a murderous turn. A nefarious conspiracy reemerges and leads the characters into the heart of the Middle East, where they encounter the unexpected and find a reason for hope. Grab your copy now of The Culmination, A New Beginning by Gwen M. Plano. Available worldwide in hardcover, paperback, and all major ebook formats. The Culmination is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Now, we're kind of working our way backwards on your books, John. We've talked about Eternal Road, and now the book before that was The Contract with Gwen. You want to tell us a little bit about that book, working with Gwen, the process, the ups and downs,
yeah,
the highs and lows, the good and the bad?
I'd be happy to. well, as the blurb said, you know, The Contract was really, about a couple of souls that came down to Earth to try to correct a really deficient problem on the Earth. And it's a great story. And I say that because I only was part of it. I mean, Gwen also was involved in the story. And it was interesting working with Gwen. Gwen started her writing career as more or less a writing memoirs. I'm a memoirist.
Yeah.
That's a word.
The word I was thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. She memoirs. She basically has a wonderful memoir of her life prior to, you know, picking up writing and all that. And it's a great book. It was actually her idea to collaborate on this particular book. We were both in the club together, and she just mentioned one time, hey, how about a collaboration? And I said, well, that sounds like fun. And I said, to me, it'll be great. So what we did is we each brought our skills to the table. Gwen has this really warm view of people. I have a terrorist view of people, you know. You kind of blend those things together, and pretty soon it comes out that, you know, there are some warmths and there's some terrors in there. Warm terrorists. Well, every thriller should have, you know, some elements of warmth and some elements of terror. The difference, the way we approach this, the difference we did is we each took a character once we had finished the rough draft, and we each kept the character honest all the way through the book. In other words, we didn't want the character reflecting just Gwen's view or just my view. We wanted the character to be a blended character so that the book had honesty to it. In other words, when someone read it, they wouldn't really know unless they saw the names on the cover, which are very prominent, but that two people actually wrote it, and two people who up to that point hadn't met, hadn't even been in the same room together. So if you can imagine that kind of a process. Long story short, it became a kickoff for her to do two other books under the same kind of storyline. And I have to say, you can read The Contract and not read the other books, or read the other books and not read The Contract, and you're not lost. I mean, there's an element of originality in each book that keeps you on track. So, loved working with Gwen. It was a memorable experience. We unfortunately just couldn't continue. We started The Choice, life again got in the way, and I couldn't do two books at one time, so I had to break away. Anything else about The Contract?
That pretty much covers it. As you said, Gwen started out as a memoirist. That's her book, Letting Go into Perfect Love, which we just recently republished about a month ago. So everybody's urged to get out there and find that, Letting Go into Perfect Love by Gwendolyn M. Plano.
Yeah,
and
with a beautiful
right
new
guys.
Cover on it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are the right guys to be publishing that book, I can tell you that.
Well, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So before the contract, before we get to your first trilogy, which was your thrillers, your first books, tell us about Circumstance of Childhood, which was released in 2017.
Right. This was a book that I always wanted to write. And I'll give you a quick synopsis. A couple of best friends in school. Pal around together, and you know they just do everything together. They both decided they wanted to become, for whatever reason, I guess you don't wake up in the morning and say this, you really work at it your whole life, but they wanted to be National Football League players. They wanted the stardom, they wanted the money, they wanted the glory of playing NFL football. They actually got a scholarship. They actually got a scholarship to UT Austin, by the way. And they got a scholarship. And unfortunately, one of the guys was killed in a car crash. You notice there's a theme here in some of my books. I tend to murder people in car crashes. But anyway, it was an unfortunate thing. And the other one went on. He actually, because they had developed a unique play procedure and process, the two of them, the other guy wanted to quit football but went on because the coach convinced him he should go on. And instead of playing in the backfield, he became a quarterback. Well, he became a Heisman winner. He actually got drafted, went into football, big star, went into broadcasting. Big contract in broadcasting, had all kinds of contracts for products and services that he would recommend. And then, you know, he's at the top of his game. He's at the top of the heap. And he also founded an investment firm, a firm that, you know, would take your money and reinvest it in stocks, bonds, and stuff. And it was an equity firm, worked on Wall Street, was a well-known, prestigious firm. And then one day, a bunch of auditors showed up, and they found a discrepancy. The discrepancy, of course, amounted to a significant amount of money, and it looked like our main character was the one that took the money. So the balance of the book is to prove that there didn't. It encompasses courtroom, it encompasses couple other things. There's the paranormal part, which you mentioned, Stephen. The paranormal part comes back as a ghost, and he comes back with the rule. The rule is he can't alter anything that would alter the time continuum. In other words, he can't prevent the guy from going to court. He can't alter the fact that somebody stole the money. So the two of them have to figure out the crime. And obviously, in the end, we'll have to figure out whether they did or did not.
Cool.
Great.
Kind of sounds like Ghost Detectives.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
well,
over on Twitter.
Ghost is hamstrung.
Over on Twitter, Jan Sykes added that the contract was another fabulous story. She says, I love the collaboration with @GMPlano and @HowlWave.
Yeah.
Boy,
now,
good endorsements today, John.
Yeah,
yes.
People and these are people that you can trust. You know, Jan Sykes is a reader. She understands stories. So if she's given the endorsement, you know, you can trust that. Now, talking about the trilogy here. We did back at the old place. At the other show, we did a radio play on one of the scenes from one of these books. Which one was that?
That was Our Justice.
Our Justice. Okay. Yeah, because that was I remember that one was a lot of fun, and that was a cool story too. But let's since we're going backwards, I guess on the trilogy we can flip it to the first one, His Revenge.
Yeah,
or just tell us all three.
Us about all three.
I'll be real quick. The trilogy, the reason it came out to be a trilogy is the story was too big. I mean, I started to write My Girl, and it's a story of a guy, a lawyer, average guy, who gets wrapped up with some terrorists for no other reason other than he had a boat named My Girl. That's why the boat's, why Girl is GRL. It's the name of a boat. The boat was such a perfect boat that could be stocked with explosives and used to blow up the midshipmen on their summer cruise. And nobody would suspect this particular boat. So the terrorists had earmarked the boat. They had purchased the boat. The boat was gone. Finally, John Cannon, who is the main character, figured it out. He did stop them. The next in the book is His Revenge. So notice the my, his, and our. His Revenge is the guy that was in charge of the terrorists and charge of the terrorist plan was so mad at John Cannon for stopping that he decided to get revenge on John. And he actually shot John's beloved. So the cover shows a little target on this poor girl's head. Our Justice, obviously, is a summation and a culmination of the three. And it just is labeled Our Justice because both Stephanie, who is the girl, and John Cannon finally get their revenge on this guy named Jacobs, who is pretty much at the crux of making their lives totally miserable for three books. That's it in a nutshell.
Wow, okay.
Now, listeners, those are called His Revenge, Our Justice, and My Girl is the trilogy. And if you go to places like Amazon, you'll find, they're dated 2015, 2016, 2017. So you can easily tell which were his earlier works with this trilogy.
Yeah.
So what's next, John? What's 1,000 words a day happening right now?
Well, right now I'm working on the second sort of a sequel to Eternal Road. And I thought Eternal Road would be a one-book pony.
Mm-hmm.
But a number of people that I really respect said, hey, there's more to this story, and we want more, and we know where you live, and if you don't give us more, we will, we'll find you. So the next sequence is the James and Sam, who were in the first book, are called back to duty because an Air Force pilot and a guy by the name of Eddie Rickenbacker. Eddie was responsible for escorting this Air Force pilot to his eternal home, but both of them are lost now on the Eternal Road, and we don't know why. So these two have been called to try to find them, and that's what they're doing at this point in time, looking for Eddie Rickenbacker and a guy named Ryan, who's the Air Force pilot.
Wow, sounds fun.
Any time frame on when this might be available?
Oh, I wanted it done by June, but I'm afraid it's going to be probably a September launch.
Yeah, I know how that goes. I had something that was going to be out this tail end of winter, and it's still not done.
And do keep us informed, John, so we can let our listeners know when it's available and put it in our newsletter and get it out there. We try to make sure people know when books are coming out.
Yeah, we'll promote that all over social
media.
And
I sure appreciate it, too.
Yep.
All right.
Okay,
well,
John.
Thank you for coming on and spending your Wednesday evening with us tonight.
It's been a real pleasure, and I both of you, I thank you. I think you're doing all the right stuff in terms of the publishing world, and you just, you know, you're the kind of guys in this business that you love to be associated with.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
So how do listeners find you, John? You're out there on social media. You got a Twitter handle, blog, website.
Yes, I have all of that. My blog, it's real easy to remember. It's johnwhowell.com. I have Facebook and Twitter too, but Twitter is really Howell Wade.
At Howell Wade. Yeah.
At Howell Wade. And then my Amazon author page is basically www.amazon.com/author/John W. Howell.
All right. And of course, listeners, if you ever want to try to get a hold of any of our guests and don't know how, we have a contact form at freshinkgroup.com too. Just send us a note and we'll make sure we get you connected. John, it's been a real treat.
I might add one thing. I'm also a member of the Story Empire, which is a group of writers that provide, you know, some guidance, and I can be reached at Story Empire, which is storyempire@wordpress.com.
Great.
Cool. All right. Well, again, thanks for joining us tonight, John. And listeners, if you missed this episode, you're not hearing me right now, but if you miss any other ones, and you, or you just want to hear this one again, because we've had such a fantastic guest on tonight, Stephen, where are those archives at?
There are five places. Go to YouTube, search for the Fresh Ink Group channel, and all of our podcasts are there, as well as all of our book trailers, some audio books, audio shorts, and other things. We urge you, subscribe to that channel and help us spread the word. We're also on the podcast tabs of three websites, freshinkgroup.com, my co-host's website, beamweeks.com, my website, stephengees.com, and of course, we are on Spotify.
Yes, and our newsletter is expanding every week. We're adding some cool stuff in there. You can get some videos, some little pieces of stories from people's books, excerpts. Maybe even a short story here and there, and then all kinds of information about this show, and all the podcast links and everything are there. So go over to freshinkgroup.com on the homepage, scroll down to the bottom, and there's the newsletter. You can sign up to get it so you are in the know with everything that we are doing.
And next week, our guest will be motivational speaker and author Carlisle Toms, who is the host of the Instagram program Happy Talk, which is just a fun little podcast that tries to stay pleasant about the world and what we live.
Yeah, and then the week after that is Trent Bennett, voice actor. If you were listening earlier in the show, the audiobook sample of Robert G. Willowscroft's book, Trent Bennett is the voice you heard in there narrating it. And he'll be on. You can get advice for getting into audiobooks, and it's kind of going to be a cool angle. So if you're a writer and you want to know, you know, a little bit more about audiobooks, this is the guy. He can tell you about that aspect of it, not just the voiceover part, but of production and the ins and outs of working with a company like Fresh Ink Group versus working with Amazon. So tune in for that one.
And he does do like seminars and informational things for Audible ACX, which is Amazon's audiobook arm. So he's used to talking to people who are wanting to learn about getting into audiobooks. So if you've got some questions, this is the guy to ask. And then the week after that, we're going to have author and pastor Lanny Richmond, who happens to be the uncle of my co-host, Beam Weeks here. Mm-hmm. And then the week after that, we're going to have Jan Sykes, who you heard call in earlier tonight talking about John. So we're looking forward to having all of those.
So tune in, everybody. Tune in. Mark your calendars. Do whatever you got to do. And we will see you or hear you, do the show again next week. So take care and enjoy the rest of your week, everybody.
Yep. Thanks to our callers. And thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, guys.
Yep.
Take care.
Bye.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.